Chapter 11. A Long Way Down. Taipei, Taiwan. Taipei 101 is among the tallest buildings in the world. Some say it is the tallest, if the 60-meter spire can be counted. But others argue that a spire is not a building, and so Taipei 101 can technically only be called the tallest structure in the world. In any event, there were four buildings in construction, two in Asia, one in Africa, and the fourth in Saudi Arabia, with their sights set on the world's tallest building crown. So Taipei's claim to fame could be a fleeting one. Artemis and company landed in Chiang Kai-shek International Airport barely 3 hours before the deadline in a rented Lear jet. And though Butler was a registered pilot, qualified for day and night flying in various aircraft, it was Artemis who flew most of the way. Flying helped him think, he claimed. Also, no one would interrupt him while he put the finishing touches to his audacious plan. Artemis was fully aware of the risks involved with this particular scheme. The pivotal element was purely theoretical, and the rest was highly unlikely. He briefed the others on the details in the back of the rented Lexus on the 40-minute drive from the airport to downtown Taipei. The entire group looked drained, even though they had eaten and rested on the plane. Only number one was in high spirits. Everywhere he looked, there were new wonders to be gaped at, and he could not imagine that anyone would be able to injure him while he was under Butler's protection. "The bad news is that we're running close to the deadline," said Artemis, "so there'll be no time to set a trap."
"And the good news, Artemis?" said Holly grumpily. She was grumpy for a few reasons. She was dressed as a human girl, because Artemis had asked her to save her magic for when it would be needed. She had managed to boost her magical energy by burying a sealed acorn she kept round her neck. But there had been no full moon, so her power reserves were limited. Also, she was completely shut off from the people, and to top it all, she had no doubt that Ark Sul would have her up on charges if any of them did manage to survive the trade-off. After all, she had brought Number One halfway across the world instead of escorting him safely to Haven City. "The good news is the Kong can't be too far ahead of us, so it is unlikely that he had time to set up any traps either." The Lexus entered the Xinyi district, and Taipei 101 rose from the cityscape like a giant bamboo shoot. The buildings around it seemed to shrink back in awe. Butler craned his head back to see the top of the 500-plus-meter building.
"We never do anything small, do we? Why can't we for once have a meeting in a Starbucks?"
"I didn't pick this building," said Artemis. "It picked us. Fate has brought us here."
He tapped Butler on the shoulder, and the bodyguard pulled over into the first space he could find. It took forever. Taipei morning traffic was thick and slow-moving and spewed smoke like an irritated dragon. Many of the thousands of pedestrians and cyclists had smog masks strapped across their faces. When the vehicle had stopped, Artemis continued his briefing.
"Taipei 101 is a miracle of modern engineering. The architects took their inspiration from the humble bamboo, but this shape alone would not keep the skyscraper steady in the event of an earthquake or high winds, so the designers built it on a frame of concrete-filled, steel-boxed supercolumns and installed a 700-ton steel ball as a mass damper pendulum to absorb the force of the wind. Ingenious. The pendulum swings instead of the building. It's become quite the tourist attraction. You could even watch it from the observation deck. The owners have covered the damper with 15 centimeters of solid silver, which have been etched by the famous Taiwanese artist Alexander Chow."
"Thanks for the fine art lesson," interrupted Holly. "Now, how about you let us in on your plan? I want to get this over with and take off this ridiculous tracksuit. It's so shiny, I feel I could be picked up on a satellite."
"I don't much like this outfit either," complained Number One, who was dressed in a bonnet and an orange floral muumuu.
Orange, he had decided, was definitely not for him.
"Your outfit is the least of your worries," noted Holly. "I'm guessing that we're about to hand you over to a bloodthirsty hitman, eh, Artemis?"
"That we are," confirmed Artemis, "but only for a few seconds. There will be little or no danger to you. And if my suspicions are correct, it is just possible that we may save Hybris."
"Go back to me being in danger for a few seconds," said Number One, his thick brow folding in a frown. "In Hybris, a few seconds can last a very long time."
"Not here," said Artemis, in what he hoped was a reassuring tone. "Here, a few seconds is how long it'll take you to open your hand." Number One opened his fingers a couple of times, experimentally.
"That's still pretty long. Any way to cut it down?"
"Not really.
If we do, it means sacrificing Minerva.
Well, she did tie me to a chair.
Number One glanced round at the shocked faces.
What? I'm joking. Of course I'll do it, but no more orange, please.
Artemis smiled, but it did not quite reach his eyes. Very well, no more orange. Now, the plan. It is in two parts. If the first part doesn't work, then the second is redundant.
Redundant, said Number One almost unconsciously. Not needed. Superfluous.
Exactly. So I'll explain that when necessary.
What about the first part? Asked Holly.
In the first part, we meet a vicious hitman and his band of thugs, and he will expect us to hand over Number One.
So what do we do?
We hand over Number One, said Artemis. He turned to the slightly nervous imp.
How do you like the plan so far? Well, I don't like the first bit, and I don't know the last bit, so I'm really hoping the middle bit is exceptional.
Don't worry, said Artemis. It is.
Taipei 101. The group took a high-speed elevator from Taipei 101's cavernous lobby to the observation floor. Holly and Number One had technically been given permission to enter the building by a small plaque over the main door, which simply urged visitors to come and go as they pleased. And seeing as she did not feel the urge to throw up in the elevator, Holly guessed that the plaque counted as an invitation.
Toshiba elevators, said Artemis, reading from a pamphlet he had picked up at information. These are the fastest elevators in the world. We are moving at 18 meters per second, so it shouldn't take much more than half a minute to reach the 89th floor.
Artemis consulted his watch when the doors dinged open.
Right on time. Impressive engineering. I may get one of these for the house.
They stepped out into the observation area, which had a restaurant at the far end. From this lofty vantage point, visitors could walk all the way round the floor and shoot video of the panoramic view. From this height, it was even possible to see China across the Taiwan Strait. For a moment, the group forgot their worries and allowed themselves to be awestruck by the grace of this enormous structure. The sky was outside the window and blended almost seamlessly with the sea on the horizon. Number One was especially dumbfounded. He turned in small circles, the muumuu swishing round his legs.
Less of the pirouetting, little man, advised Butler, the first to get his mind back on the job. You're showing your legs. And pull that bonnet down over your face.
Number One obliged, though he was not happy with the bonnet. It was shapeless and saggy, and made his head look like a bag of washing.
Good luck, Holly, said Artemis into thin air. We will meet you on the 23rd floor. Get this done as quickly as you can, Holly whispered into his ear. I don't have enough magic for a long shield. I'm barely invisible as it is.
Understood, said Artemis from the side of his mouth.
The small band walked slowly towards the bar area and took a table below the enormous mass damper, suspended a meter above the 89th floor. The 700-ton ball was a sight to behold, like an indoor moon, its surface etched with traditional Yuan Zhoumin drawings.
This is the legend of Nian, explained Artemis casually, while Butler scanned the room. A ferocious beast that would feed on human flesh each New Year's Eve. To scare Nian away, torches were lit and firecrackers were set off, because Nian was known to fear the colour red, thus the splashes of red paint. It seems likely from the pictures that Nian was actually a troll. Chow must have based his work on contemporary accounts.
A waitress came to their table.
Li Hobo, said Artemis.
Can we have a part of oolong tea? Organic, if you have it.
The waitress blinked at Artemis, then looked up at Butler, who was still standing.
You are Mr. Fowl, she asked, in excellent English.
I am Master Fowl, said Artemis,
tapping the table for attention.
Do you have something for me?
The waitress passed him a napkin.
From the gentleman along the bar, she said.
Artemis glanced down the arc of the metal railing and buffer system which kept the patrons away from the mass damper, and more importantly, kept the mass damper away from them. Billy Kong was seated a dozen tables down, waggling his eyebrows in their direction. He was not alone. No one else was eyebrow-waggling, but three men were at the table with him, and several others were dotted around the bar area. Minerva was on Kong's knee. He held her fast by the forearm. Her shoulders were tense, but there was defiance in the set of her mouth.
Well, Artemis said to Butler.
At least 12, replied the bodyguard. Bully must have friends in Taiwan.
None of them invisible, thank goodness, said Artemis, opening the napkin.
Send the creature to the reserved table, read the message on the napkin. I will send the girl. No tricks, or people will get hurt.
He passed the napkin to Butler. What do you think?
Butler gave the message a summary glance. I think he won't try anything here. Too many cameras. If the security doesn't get him on film, a tourist will. If Kong goes for a double cross, it'll be outside.
And by then, it should be too late.
So we hope.
The waitress returned with a bamboo tray, bearing a clay pot of tea and three glasses.
Artemis took his time, pouring himself some of the steaming liquid.
How are you feeling, Number One?
My leg hurts a bit.
The painkiller's wearing off. I'll ask Butler to give you another shot later. Are you ready to go? Everything will be fine, I assure you.
All I have to do is open my hand?
As soon as we're in the elevator.
That's it. Do you want me to distract the bad man with some witty banter, like you do with Holly?
No, that won't be necessary. Just open your hand.
Should I look scared?
That would be appropriate.
Good. Shouldn't be a problem.
Butler was functioning in full action mode. Generally, he reined himself in, walking with a slight stoop to avoid drawing attention, but now he stood tall and tensed, ready to spring into action. His gaze was fierce, and muscles bulged in his neck. He caught Billy Kong's gaze and zeroed in on his eyeballs. Even across a crowded room, the hostility was almost palpable. A couple of more physically sensitive bystanders suddenly felt anxious and cast their eyes about for the nearest restroom. When he was finished staring down Billy Kong, Butler knelt to give final instructions to Number One. All you have to do is walk down to that table with a reserved sign. Wait until Minerva gets there, then continue on to Kong. If they hustle you out straight away, count to 20, then open your hand. If they wait for us to leave, open your hand when the elevator doors are closed. Understand?
I understand everything. In any language you care to speak in.
Are you set? Number One took a deep breath. He could feel his tail vibrating anxiously. He had been in a bit of a daze since the time tunnel. How could anyone take all of this in? Skyscrapers, for heaven's sake. Buildings that actually scraped the sky.
I'm set, he said.
Off you go, then. Good luck.
Number One began his long, lonely walk back into captivity. Scores of humans thronged around him, excited, sweating, chewing things, pointing machines at each other.
Those would be cameras, I suppose.
The noon sun flashed through the ceiling-to-floor windows, catching on the silver of the mass damper, lighting it up like a disco ball. The tabletops loomed just above head height. Waiters and waitresses bustled past with loaded trays. Glasses fell. Children screamed.
Too many people, thought Number One. I miss demons. Even Abbott.
Well, okay, maybe not Abbott.
Number One reached the reserved table. He had to stand on tiptoes to see the folded piece of card with the word printed on it. He lifted the flap on his bonnet to get a clear look. He was beginning to realize that a muumuu and bonnet were not typical mudchild garb, as Artemis had told him.
This is a terrible disguise. I look like a freak. Surely someone will see that I'm not human. I wish I could shield like Holly.
Unfortunately, even if Number One could control his burgeoning magical powers, shielding had never been a weapon in the demon warlock arsenal. Number One took a step to the right, squinting past the glare of the giant mass damper. Minerva was on her way down, taking small, careful steps towards the reserved table. Behind her, Kong leaned forward in his seat, toes tapping with excitement and anticipation. He was like a dog on a leash, with a scent of a fox in his nose. Minerva arrived. She lifted the brim of Number One's bonnet to check it was him.
It's not my bonnet, said Number One. And this is certainly not my muumuu.
Minerva took his hand. Before the abduction, she had been 80% genius and 20% 12-year-old girl. Now it was about 50-50.
I am sorry for everything, for tying you up and the rest. I thought you would try to eat me.
We're not all savages, said Number One, and my wrists did hurt for ages. But I forgive you, I suppose, as long as your tying-up days are over.
Yes, I promise.
Minerva looked over Number One's head towards Artemis's table.
Why is he helping me? Do you know?
Number One shrugged.
I'm not sure. Holly, our friend, said it was something about puberty. Apparently you're pretty, though to be honest, I can't see it myself.
Their conversation was interrupted by a whistle from further down the bar. Billy Kong was growing impatient. The ex-Paradiso employee beckoned number one on with his index finger.
I should go. Leave. Depart.
Minerva nodded.
Okay. Be careful. I will see you soon. Where is it? In your hand?
Yes, said number one automatically. Then, how did you know? Minerva walked on slowly.
Genius. Can't help it.
This place is littered with genii, thought number one.
I just hope Mr. Kong isn't another one.
He continued on his way, being careful to keep his feet and hands inside the muumuu. The last thing he wanted to do was cause a panic by exposing his grey, stumpy digits. Although, perhaps the humans would bow down and adore him. After all, he was incredibly handsome, compared to their own gangly males. Billy Kong was all smiles when number one reached the table. On his face, a smile looked like the first symptom of a disease. His hair was spiked in perfect points. Even in the middle of kidnapping, Kong still made time for hair. Good grooming says a lot about a person.
Welcome back, demon, he said, grabbing a hank of the muumuu. So nice to see you, if it is you.
If it is me, said number one, confused.
Me is all I can be.
Excuse me if I don't take your word for it, snorted Kong, tugging back the bonnet's frill for a quick peek at number one's face. If that foul kid is half as smart as I've heard, then he's sure to be trying something.
Kong examined the imp's face, poking the plate on his forehead, pulling back the lips to check the pink gums and square white teeth. Finally, he traced the rune on number one's forehead with a finger to make sure it wasn't painted on. Satisfied?
Pretty much. I guess little Artemis didn't have time to do a switch. I ran him too hard.
You ran us all too hard, complained number one. We had to fly here in a machine. I saw the moon close up.
You're breaking my heart, demon. After what you did to my brother, you're lucky to be alive. Something I hope to remedy in the next few minutes.
Number one twisted his head to catch a glimpse of the elevators. Artemis, Butler, and Minerva were two steps away from the doors.
Don't look at them. They can't help you. Nobody can help you.
Kong clicked his fingers, and a muscular man joined them at the table. He was hefting a large metal suitcase. In case you're wondering, this is a bomb. You know what a bomb is, don't you?
Bomb, said number one. Explosive incendiary device.
His eyes widened.
But that could hurt someone. A lot of someone's.
Exactly. Not humans, though. Demons. I'm going to strap this onto you, set the timer, then send you back to your island. The blast should at the very least put a big dent in the demon population. You won't be crossing over here for your little nighttime hunts for quite a while.
I won't do it,
said number one, actually stamping his foot.
Kong laughed. Are you sure you're a demon? From what I hear, the last one was more demonic.
I am a demon. A warlock demon.
Kong leaned close enough for number one to smell his citrus aftershave.
Well, little Mr. Warlock, maybe you can turn this bomb into a bunch of flowers. But I doubt it.
I don't have to do anything, because you can't make me go back to Hybris.
Kong took a set of handcuffs from his pocket.
On the contrary, I know exactly what to do.
I picked up a thing or two in the chateau. All we have to do is dig that silver slug out of your leg and Hybris will suck you home. Number one glanced again towards the elevator. The doors were closing on his new friends.
You mean this silver slug?
He asked, showing Kong what had been concealed in his hand.
He took it out, breathed Billy Kong. Fal took out the slug.
Took it out, agreed number one. Extracted, removed. Then he dropped the silver nugget and disappeared. Holly had been crouched on the mass damper, watching events unfold. So far, everything had gone according to plan. Minerva had reached Artemis, and Butler had hustled them both to the elevator. At the other end of the bar, Billy Kong was doing his whole grinning psycho bit. When all this was over, that mud man would have to be mind-wiped. There would be quite a few loose ends to clear up, actually. Not by her, though. She was not LEP anymore. After this, she would be lucky to be Section 8. Holly tapped a button on her wrist computer, zooming in on number one. The imp raised his left hand, the signal. This was it. Time to test theories. It was either hello again, or goodbye. Forever. Artemis's plan was a risky one because his calculations were theoretical, but it was the only chance to save the Demon Island, and Artemis had been right so far. If Holly had to rely on someone's theories, she would prefer those theories to be Artemis Fowl's. As Holly watched Number One drop the silver slug and disappear, she could not resist snapping a photo of Kong's face with her helmet camera. His reaction was priceless. They would have a good laugh over that later. Then she activated her wings, rising above the giant silver ball, watching for signs. Seconds later, a faint blue electrical rectangle began spinning at the silver ball's crown, exactly where Artemis had known it would. Number One was coming back, just as Artemis had predicted. Such a large mass of silver within 3 meters should interrupt Number One's journey home. It should cause a momentary materialization at the summit, where the damper's energy field is most concentrated. You, Holly, have to be there to make sure this momentary materialization becomes more permanent. On the mass damper, Number One's shape was visible inside the glowing rectangle. He seemed a little confused, as though half asleep. One arm snaked through into this world, grasping at reality. It was enough for Holly. She darted down and clamped a silver bracelet round Number One's grey wrist. The ghostly fingers wiggled, then solidified. Solidity sped along Number One's arm like grey paint, rescuing him from limbo. In seconds, where there had only been space, now crouched a shivering creature.
"Did I go?" asked the little imp. "Am I back?"
"Yes and yes," said Holly. "Now stay quiet and still. We have to get you out of here."
The mass damper swung slowly, dissipating the wind power buffeting Taipei 101. Holly leaned into the sway, grabbed hold of Number One and took off vertically, careful to keep her cargo shielded by the 700-ton silver ball. The next floor up was another observation floor, but it was closed for decoration. A single workman was slicing carpet for a corner section, and he did not seem surprised to see a moo-moo-clad imp come sailing over the railing.
"Hey," he said. "It's an imp in a moo-moo. You know something, imp?"
Number One landed on the floor with a thump.
"No," he said cautiously. "Tell me something."
"I'm not a bit surprised to see you," said the man. "In fact, you're so unremarkable that I'm going to forget all about you as soon as you've gone."
Number One picked himself up, straightening his bonnet.
"You've had a talk with him, I see."
Holly switched off her shield, speckling into view.
"I gave him a blast of the mesmer."
She peered over the railing down into the restaurant. "Come here, Number One. You'll enjoy this." Number One placed his fingers against the glass. Kong and his cronies were creating chaos below, blundering towards the elevators. Kong was particularly perturbed, barging tourists from his path and overturning tables.
"We don't have time for this," said Number One.
"Probably not," agreed Holly. Neither fairy moved.
"Hey, look," said the workman. "Another fairy. How utterly unremarkable."
Only when the Toshiba elevator doors had closed behind Billy Kong and his crew did Holly turn to leave.
"Where to now?"
asked Number One, wiping a happy tear from his eye.
"Now we go to stage two," replied Holly, calling the elevator. "Time to save Hybris."
"Never a dull moment,"
said Number One, scurrying into the metal box.
"Hey, my first cliché!"
Artemis and Butler had watched Minerva cross the restaurant towards them. She bore herself with considerable courage under the circumstances. Her chin was up, and she had a determined look in her eye.
"Butler, can I ask you something?" said Artemis.
Butler was trying to keep an eye on every single person in the restaurant.
"I'm a little busy at the moment, Artemis."
"Nothing taxing, just a yes or no answer. Is it normal, during puberty, to feel these blasted feelings of attraction at stressful times, during a ransom drop, for instance?"
"She is pretty, isn't she?"
"Extremely. And funny, too. Remember that quark joke?"
"I do. We must have a talk about jokes someday. Perhaps Minerva could sit in. And in response to your question, it is normal. The more stressful the situation, the more your body pumps out the hormones."
"Good. Normal, then. Back to business."
Minerva didn't rush. She picked her way around tourists and tables as she walked steadily towards them. When she drew level, Butler placed a guiding and protective hand on her back.
"Get kidnapped every day, do you?" he growled, steering her to the elevator.
Artemis followed, glancing back over his shoulder to make sure they were not being pursued. Kong was not even looking at them, so happy was he with his prize. The elevator opened, and the trio stepped inside. On the elevator wall, the floor light was rapidly winking downwards. Artemis held out his hand to Minerva.
Artemis Fowl II. Pleased to meet you, finally.
Minerva shook the hand warmly.
Minerva Paradiso. Likewise. You gave up your demon for me. I do appreciate it.
She blushed slightly. The elevator slowed to a smooth stop, and the steel doors slid open with barely a hiss. Minerva peeked out.
This is not the lobby. Why aren't we leaving?
Artemis stepped out onto the 40th floor.
Our work here is not finished. I need to get our demon back, and it's about time you knew what you almost went up against.